The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your
settles
soul.
In your soul.
In your soul.
It does settle in your soul.
It does settle in your soul.
Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa with my partner, Wynn Carpenter. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm doing good. And we are also with our producer, Ashley. How are you?
Doing well. And it is National Siblings Day. So I sent my sister a text this morning.
This is not the Carl Bott Show. We don't care about what national day it is.
Yes, but this is fun and a lighthearted way to start the show before you get into the real meat of the deal.
Oh, come on. We're always lighthearted. Always. Broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studios, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, 1460 AM, your talk radio, and we are also streaming live worldwide. KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. We are archived forever.
Forever.
And ever.
And ever.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
But we also...
Mm-hmm. Be what?
Well, we also do something called Mountaintop Media.
We do.
Mm-hmm. If you go to mountaintopmedia.com, you can see podcasts again, podcasted all over the world, and they are archived. We have some very interesting subjects, everything from the Second Amendment to candidates. And speaking of candidates, on the phone we have Jenny Ray LaRue, who is running for the governor of California. How are you, Jenny Ray?
I'm so glad to be with you this morning. I'm having a great morning, thanks.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, we have located our campaign in Orange County, even though I've been a resident of Reading for the last 14 years. And my family is here for spring break. They arrived on Friday night. And there's just something wonderful about having my kids in the early morning getting a snuggle in before the day starts.
How many children do you have, Jenny Ray?
I have three beautiful boys, 9, 5, and 2.
Awesome.
Well, we had Rachel Hamm on last week, and they have
four boys.
Four boys.
All these ladies with all these
boys. I know. It's not
what's up with you guys?
We're in a different kind of contest, but there are a lot of boys going around. Yeah.
There you go.
We're tasked with raising the men of the future. I feel like it's a great honor.
There you go.
Tell us a little something about yourself, Jenny Ray. Who is Jenny Ray LaRue?
Well, I am a number of different things. Like I've already mentioned, I'm a mom and a wife. I'm happily married to a man who can fix anything. I literally have not found something that the man cannot fix. From something small in our house up to helicopters. That guy is incredible.
Wow.
My husband's name is Paul. I have three boys, and those boys are just as different as they could be, but they are such a spark of life for us. We live on a farm. We have 181 acres, and we have a dinner bell, so we send them outside when they need to get their energy out, and we call them back home when food is on the table. So it's a wonderful, wonderful life. I'm a business owner. 10 years ago, I purchased a business that was, in my view, headed in the wrong direction. The owner had lost vision, and I planned to quit from the company. I went to bed one night and thought, I think I'm going to quit this business. And the next morning, I woke up, and in my call that was supposed to be a quitting meeting, I offered to buy the company from him instead. And so for the last 10 years, I've had the opportunity to grow and cultivate the future of that business. It's a wonderful international company now that has grown significantly since I bought it 10 years ago. And I'm an entrepreneur, so I've started companies. I've built organizations with other people in segments like energy and payments technology. And now I have the opportunity to run for office to build the future of California.
Wow. So you're going to clean up California?
Well, that's one of the things I'm going to do. I want to be better than that. So painting it up is kind of it's what a lot of people would hope for as a best-case scenario now, but I have bigger ambitions. I'd like to build us for the future. We're the most remarkable economic engine of the country. We have the strongest economy historically, even though now we're really kind of carving it out from the middle and making sure that it will implode if the leadership continues. So there's a lot more that I want to do other than just cleaning up the mess.
Okay, well, so with that, and since you're a resident of Shasta County, you're probably fully aware of the lack of water that's coming down through to all the farmers along the acid canal that is fed from Shasta Dam. So you're fully aware
Absolutely.
Of that, right?
It's a tragedy of mismanagement.
Yes.
And what we saw, you know, I went up to Shasta Dam in December and took a video of the sluice gates open in the middle of our rainy season. Mm-hmm. And my family and I, on our acreage, we share a dam with one other neighboring family. And we did something that the state of California could have done in December, which is that we closed our dam. We let them fill up, and we have an entirely full lake from a rainy season that happened in a time that's not usual. Usually we get our rain in January and February, but when it started to rain in December, we captured that water. And so this crisis is a man-made crisis. So not only is it a crisis for the farmers, which means they're going to have to make choices about herds, we're going to have to make choices about our crops, but it's worse than that. It's a crisis that could have been prevented. That's the worst kind of crisis.
And the big thing, too, the choice is being forced upon them. It's not an optional choice, and that's the...
So it's not a choice.
Yeah, that's it. It's like they're going to have to sell them off before they're ready to sell. It's going to cost them money. They're not going to be producing. And then we, the consumer, are going to be paying through the nose down the road.
Well, as governor, I mean, when you guys are both talking about something, I believe this... federal management.
Right.
Okay, so that isn't even going under the jurisdiction of the state.
Yeah, but the state can, as governor, work with the feds to get that taken care
right.
of.
Right.
And the congressmen and women
of our
state. You'd
have to introduce a bill. Right.
Yes.
And that's what I was
going to... And that's specifically in Shasta County, although there are a lot of areas of the state that I do have jurisdiction over from a water perspective.
I think the people have it probably with the water rights.
Absolutely.
I think that's where you're looking, because you'd have to have water rights. I know some of the water rights here go back 150 years. But tell me the jurisdiction you'd have, because that's interesting. We had a talk with Mark Moser, and I don't know if you know him or not. He's running for Kamala Harris's old seat against Padilla for the senator of the United States. Okay. We interviewed him, and then we interviewed Dr. Cordy Williams also. Cordy, we've known for a while, and one of the things that was suggested was that if the governor was able to talk to the state senator, not the state senator, the senator for the state in the United States Senate, and possibly put forward a bill to take away the jurisdiction of the water and managing it from the feds and give it to the states, would that be something that you would entertain?
Well, I would absolutely entertain it. I think that it would be an incredible challenge to get it through. But anything that restores the rights of the people, those water rights were given at a time when it was expected that they would always be fulfilled. And not only are they water rights, but they're actually prepaid water rights. So people
mm-hmm.
pay for
That's
them
right.
before
mm-hmm.
they're delivered.
Yes.
And so it's an actual injustice
mm-hmm.
for the water rights not to be delivered in the first place, but also for people to have to pay for water that's not delivered to them, because many of them have to truck it in or procure the water by buying it from someone else at higher rates. So, you know, it's kind of a cascading crisis that can be prevented.
Well, I guess the question is you said you had jurisdiction. What jurisdiction is that the governor has over water, which is a federal issue?
Yeah.
Tell us.
So we do share, just like our forests, we co-manage water in California. So there is water that is California water.
True.
And our Department of Water Resources and our State Water Resource Board are the managing entities over that water. And having the jurisdiction over those as the senior executive of the state, I have appointments on those boards. So instead of appointing people that will pursue
mm-hmm.
a declining water agenda, mm-hmm. I can appoint people who are water managers. My water management plan is to manage on a 5-year rolling cycle. So what happened, and one of the reasons that we depleted so much water, is that a couple of years ago we flushed water out in an anticipation of a continued water surge coming down from the sky, and we can't do that. We have to plan as though we will have 5 dry water years every time we have it. And we can let water out when it is raining. We can let water out when we are nearing full capacity, but we cannot let water out when we're not sure of that. And so that management is one of the key things that I can do, and that includes turning on the delta pumps that are state. There are federal delta pumps, but there are also state delta pumps, and I can do some things like that through executive order. So through appointments and executive order, those are the two primary ways that I can help with water. In the longer run, I can also, in our budget, ensure that we're building water infrastructure that the people have already paid for, which is, again, kind of a longer-term management and infrastructure issue. But overall, those are some of the key ways that I can touch water and make a big difference for it in the state.
Well, we would help you compile a list of names to have on your water board. We have some very good, well-educated people within the water system, within Northern California. And I'm talking about Northern California, you know, the top 3 counties that have
you mean where the water is?
Where the water actually comes from. And so we have some really good people up here that would be willing to do that. And so they would be... in my mind, they would be your first choice to do that. So we could get you connected. Once you win that office, you could get connected with those folks and make that happen.
That's fantastic. That will be one of my – I have really 2 main jobs in the beginning of my tenure. One is finding the best people to operate the department so that we can do what I know is possible to be done. And the second one is to develop the first budget of California under my leadership.
Can you get rid of all the bureaucrats that are causing us problems? Get rid of the people that look at you square in the eye and lie to your face? Can you get rid of all those people because they're doing nothing but harm to all of us?
Well, it depends on how they got into office.
Right.
But in many cases, yes, right? So if they're under my jurisdiction, under my appointment, right. I have hundreds of appointments into the state, and then they have, in many cases, appointments and hiring abilities that are non-elected officials. All
right.
of those, that comes under the governor. So you can be encouraged that we'll have a different leadership team across the state, not just at the top, but actually throughout these organizations.
That's good to hear. Thank you.
You know, Jenny Ray, one of the things I find refreshing already in talking to you, we've talked briefly before, but we have many, many candidates and many people that are in office that we interview all the time, and it was very refreshing, I got to tell you this, to hear you come up with a solution, a practical solution with jurisdiction where you can interpose. If you needed to nullify something, you could or couldn't, but that was a great answer. Really appreciate that. Now, I know crime is a big deal here in California, and one of the things that we have that's really... you mentioned your kids, on your sons on the 181 acres. When I was a child, we were able to go and play in the street. You know, we used to be able to do that too, but now... crime being so rampant, what would be your positions on some of those things?
Well, crime is not just an issue for me as a mom, but it's actually the number one polled issue.
Yes, ma'am.
That people say Gavin Newsom is failing on.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's an issue for the election as well as a management issue for the state. We have a surge of around 40% in crime, that is violent crime, in our 4 major cities in California since the beginning of Gavin Newsom's tenure. And he kind of throws up his hands as if he can't figure out why this happens. But closing prisons and releasing prisoners onto the street and diminishing the rule of law by encouraging people to steal $950 of merchandise each day without penalty, and then kind of driving the circular process of not supporting our law enforcement, is really leading us to a crisis point of 2 things. One, we understand, which is that we have more criminals on our street, and that we can stop, again, through management. We have no reason to close prisons. We have more than enough budget surplus in the state of California to not just keep our prisons open, but to add staff, add capacity, and add rehabilitation programs such as workforce releases. But the second thing that's really under-talked about is that our law enforcement are not supported by Gavin Newsom. And what that's led to is a decline in registration for our police academy. That is a crisis not just for now, but for the future. And so we need to do both. We need to make sure that we have adequate staff policing and having the jurisdiction to complete their job so that we're not driving them crazy, catching criminals and releasing them before the paperwork is even finished in the office. And we also need to make sure that those criminals have a pathway back into our society as working members. And, you know, every prison guard that I talk to, everyone who works in the correction system has something to say mm-hmm. about a way that our system failing not just the prisoners, but our community. So those are issues that we will address under my leadership.
I know in Shasta County, one of the things we run into is jail space. There's been a lot of talk about building a bigger jail. And I think this kind of may be something that was echoed by our police chief that probably is something that's relevant to every other county in the state. And that is, it's the same people they keep arresting and letting go and arresting and letting go. And according to our police chief here in Redding, and according to the sheriff in Shasta County, there's about 400 criminals, men and women, that keep getting arrested and set loose. If, in fact, they could incarcerate them and keep them off the streets, they believe that they could stop 70% of the drug flow, which also would help the homeless situation, because as we all know, 70% of the homeless are on some sort of drug or alcohol or something else. So it really could help. And I think you made a great point about the fact that, you know, it's $950, you know, if somebody robs you and that's still a misdemeanor. I heard they're lowering that, though, back to $450. Have you heard that, or?
As far as I know, that's not on the table. It should be. It should be even lower than that. If you steal something, there should be a penalty to pay for it. But the idea
sure.
of it is certainly being circulated.
Well, we could have a lot of cops. I mean, we definitely could have a lot of police. The thing is that it's sort of like two farmers saying, you know, hey, we buy hay for a dollar a bale and we're selling it for a dollar a bale. I guess we need a bigger truck. You know, it's
yes.
kind of like, you know, and I think that's what's happening with law enforcement right now. I mean, you know, I have never heard that we don't need more police ever in my entire life. I grew up, in fact, my first girlfriend was the chief of police of Menlo Park's daughter. And I'm, you know, the understanding of that, I mean, we hear a lot.
I bet that kept you in line, huh, Terry?
I doubt it. Seriously doubt it.
I think I'm still in trouble over that. The guy umpired a game
probably
one time, and, yeah, I got hit with a pitch, and he said, stand in there, be tough. Buck up, buddy. So anyway, yeah, the thing is that we could use more police, but really, I mean, that's the elephant in the room is the catch-and-release situation. We could have a million police.
100%.
Yeah, I mean.
Doesn't do any good.
Yeah, you know, other than that, and also the spending in counties. And that's something else about California. You had mentioned that, you know, that our economy is, could be robust. Of course, we're hamstrung now. What do you think that the governor could do in the governor's jurisdiction in actually really being able to enhance the economic base of California?
This is such an important question because our economy was actually the number one correlated reason why people voted no on the recall last year. People that thought the economy was strong in California said, we'll keep Gavin Newsom in office. People that were worried about the economy voted to remove him from office. Well, now we've seen a surge in gas prices, an increase in inflation, mm-hmm. supply chain disruptions. Every single one of these things is a result of government action. And one of my jobs is to make sure that everyone understands exactly what happened, why it was the wrong choice, and what we need to do differently. And that cascades to other things. But really what we're seeing now is that there's incredible unrest, which presents opportunity for change
mm-hmm.
in California around our economic situation. And look, if Gavin Newsom could fix this issue, I'd be thrilled. If he was able to actually lead the state into economic prosperity, then I would be happy because many people would benefit from that. I'm not delighted when people suffer. But right now what we see is the cause of inflation was initial government action. What we're seeing to augment that is what's called a wage price spiral. So wages go up because people are trying to attract employees that have been incentivized not to work. Our unemployment benefits are too loose in California. They've been incentivized not to work, so then our businesses pay more for those employees. When they pay more, they have to charge people more. When they charge people more, people need to make more in order to pay those prices. When they need to make more, then they have to go up again. And we get into this situation that economists call a wage price spiral. And what we're seeing is that in every area of California right now, we're seeing it in housing because we have not increased our housing supply because we have just this onerous bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. We see that in our gas prices, right? Our gas could be improved with the pricing if we permitted oil production in California that has already been tapped into. It would create California jobs, and we wouldn't have to buy oil from Russia and from Saudi. We could remove the gas tax and repurpose that money toward infrastructure development from the surplus instead, which would help the people of California to be able to travel to the jobs that they need to do. I cannot tell you. I could make a list of probably 250 things that I could do inside our bureaucracy that would improve the economy of California. And everything is tied together by one core missive. Is it good to help businesses to thrive? That's a question that has not been asked in the last at least 12 years in California. Is this good for business?
Now, you did say our businesses. You did say repurpose the gas tax. Does that mean we still have a tax? Or
no, it means that I don't have the jurisdiction to remove it entirely.
That's right.
No, it was put on by law, so the governor can suspend it. But what people are concerned about is that the gas tax is going mm-hmm. right now. It's going to infrastructure. It's not being spent well there, but it is going to infrastructure. And we don't want to deplete our infrastructure funds, but we have a surplus, and one of the purposes of a surplus, one of the causes that we can use a surplus for immediately is for infrastructure. So we take the money, we put it back in your pocket as the driver. You get 51 cents removed from the price of a gallon of gas. And then we take the money that has already been overtaxed from the people of California, and we put that into infrastructure in its place. And we're able to suspend that for a really significant amount of time.
Okay, now I have a question, too. Would you be willing to audit state departments and agencies right from the get-go?
With a forensic audit.
Forensic audit.
Because a forensic audit holds up in court.
Right. Forensic audit of departments and agencies.
So the governor can ask for any department to be audited. I wouldn't do a forensic audit of every department at the beginning because it is very expensive.
Right.
But there are ranking departments that I would create a forensic audit for. The rest I would actually begin with a customer service audit, which is very inexpensive. And it asks a question that to me is as important as where we spend our resources. It's what are we delivering to the customers of that agency? And the customers being, of course, the people of California. What we're going to find in many of those situations is something that a forensic audit isn't going to tell us. A forensic audit is going to tell us whether there's fraud, waste, and mismanagement. But it's not going to tell us whether the department is doing its job for the people of California. And so I will use a mix of audit practices.
Well, if you use a zero-based balance, you use a zero-based budget. And then when you do – see, the thing about a forensic audit, and I've heard this before, they're so expensive. How expensive is it? We all know that we're getting killed on different monies that are being spent fraudulently. We all know that. I mean, so what's expensive? We spend $2 million in a county, but we save $10 million. I mean, in Shasta County alone, over the last 10 years, our budget has gone from $300 million to $600 million, and we've only gained 10,000 in population. So I think that, and I want to come back to this because we do have to go after a break. We're only going to take one break because we want you to
have all the time you need.
Have all the time you need. We're with Jenny Ray LaRue, who is running for governor. And by gosh, by golly, she has actually answered questions.
She has.
She really has.
And we appreciate that.
So, Jenny Ray, if you'd hang on, we have to go to our first break and our only break, and we'll be back on the other side. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Let them put the fear on you. Stand and deliver. Not a word you heard is true. And if there's nothing you can say, there may be nothing you can do. Do you want to be a free man?
So, your tax refund just arrived? Forget the new car stereo. Spend your money on finally fixing up that eyesore with a new paint job or collision repair at Mako Collision Repair and Auto Painting Center at 3045 Crossroads Drive. Whether it's peeling paint, dents, or rust, Mako offers free estimates. Call 530-226-0992. That's 530-226-0992. Or stop by Mako at 3045 Crossroads Drive today.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
I'm Lee Hole.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Was that Sally Lou that did that?
Yes, it was.
Okay, Jenny, are you there? Just want to make sure.
I'm here. I'm back.
Good, good. Don't want to come on here talking to somebody and then find out we lost you on the line. that does and can happen.
I don't like to be lost. I like to be found.
There you go. There you go. Amen. Okay, I just want to kind of touch a little bit on the audit again, because that is my bailiwick there. I am all about the audits because we've had such a catastrophe within our county and our cities here in Shasta County, specifically like the city of Redding. We know we need to audit there. And then we're looking at the county, absolutely. We've had a recall here, as you're well aware, and we have election campaigns going on here, left, right, and center, for all different positions here in Shasta County. We're a hotbed for all of this going on. And so my question to you is, with the people that we're going to get elected into these offices wanting to have an audit so they can see, as a new officer of the office that they're going to take and swear an oath to the state of California, or to the federal constitution and the state of California constitution, in that order, when they take that oath, they're there to serve at the will of the people and of their constituency to do what needs to be done, which is one of the many things that we have to be done, is an audit so they can see exactly what they have and what they're working with on paper, so they understand that they're voting accordingly to make sure that things get done in a timely fashion and an affordable fashion and a legal fashion. So we want to make sure that all happens, so it all comes back to an audit to see, you know, how messy is the house that they're responsible for? How do they have to clean it up? What do they have to do? So that's why I'm always pushing for the audit. I want to find out what we have going on, not only just in our county, but in our entire state. That's why I ask. So you're saying that you're going to use different ways of doing it, given depending on the agency and the department that you would be working with. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, and I just want to be really clear here. I know what the right answer is. I know what you want me to say. I'm just telling you the truth of what I'm going to do, which isn't always the same thing.
No, that's
and
okay.
And so As a manager, as a leader of an 80,000 person organization that has all of the different agencies that we have, some of my question is not how are they using the money, but should they even exist in the first place?
There you go.
And are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? And so when I have done this kind of work for these size of organizations, you don't actually do a broad audit of everything. You start by stacking based on who's spending the most money. And the ones that you suspect are probably underperforming. So, for example, I'm going to audit homelessness spending because we've spent three times as much for homelessness at the state level since Gavin Newsom took office and gotten more homelessness out of it, right? So, clearly, the money is not going where I think that it should go, and I want to understand where it's going so that I can repurpose it. So there will be selective places where I would immediately do a full audit, the one that you're talking about. There are others where I would use different management practices to assess those same kinds of questions, which is, are the people of California getting what they pay for from these organizations? And it won't all happen at the same time. Some of it will happen with state resources that already exist through the auditor's office at the state. Some of it will happen through independent review. But I have done things like this before, so you don't want to necessarily create an audit across everything at the beginning, even though it sounds like transparency. What it actually does is it relaxes focus on where we as the state of California are wasting the most money and getting the least from it. And that's really what I want to do, is start with those areas.
Perfect. That's what I wanted to hear, because you're right. It's not easy just to paint the whole thing with a broad brush. You can't do that. You have to be specific on, like you said, the agencies, departments, what have you, to get to the meat of it and find out what you really have. That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
And I think it's very clear that waste, fraud, and mismanagement are rife. And we see that even as an example at the state level with the EDD. We lost over $20 billion. It has now been confirmed in losses. And like you mentioned, we could have spent $1 million on a duplicate technology catcher. It's the easiest way to describe it. It's a piece of software that basically says, wow, there's 1,400 claims coming from a single address. Maybe this is a fraudulent claim. 80% of the claims are coming from inside our prisons. They probably shouldn't be getting those. And you know, these kind of things are things that have existed since before I was even in business, when we were using, you know, these massive computers, and a laptop was a luxury, right? You know, these things have existed for such a long time, and California is so behind. The state of Silicon Valley is one of the least technologically advanced in the ways that we manage. So again, there are lots of different management techniques that I will use, but I think that you and I agree on the purpose, which is that the people of California can see how their money is being used, can assess whether or not that money is delivering the services that it's supposed to go toward, and whether that should even exist in the first place. And all of those are pieces of what I would think about.
And then also, too, when you find those trouble spots that are duplications or redundant and so forth, do you have a problem with totally getting rid of those departments and agencies?
Well, that's what I'm elected to do.
That's right.
I'm elected to be the senior executive of the state, and so absolutely not. If they are not performing their job, if they're creating hassles 5 years to repurpose a piece of land that has already gone through CEQA and NEPA for building when we are not competing with other states, we lose businesses. They want to be here. We lose them on purpose based on these
kinds of
actions.
That's right. I agree.
That's right.
And so these are the exact issues that I am elected to serve the people of California to do.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I think that I think you hit the nail on the head with all of that. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that, you know, when we look at the legislative body, we get, and I don't have to tell you this, you probably know it better than anybody because you're right down there doing the battle, and hopefully maybe a little longer, too.
There you go.
But anyway, you're down there, and the thing is that, you know, in a lot of cases we have just law after law after law after law. Now, in Article 3, Section 1 of the California Constitution, it specifically states that the state of California recognizes the Constitution of the United States as the supreme law of the land, and California is an inseparable part of that. Now, that means basically that when the states got together, they did the compact, not contract, but a compact between the states, which is a contract between legal governments, and they created the federal government, that they gave the federal government certain things to do. These are the things you can do. If it's not in there, you can't do them. Now, because of that, some of the things that happen in our legislative body in the state of California, you could refer to Article 3, Section 1 in stating that, you know what, if it's unconstitutional, if it doesn't follow the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of California, which has to follow, at least in the enumerated area, the Constitution of the United States, then how can this even be brought up or even brought to committee? I would submit to you it would be great if somebody would put together a constitutional compliance committee that would check each bill before they go in to see if they're even constitutional.
Hey, Terry, do you have anybody in mind for that?
You.
No, I mean not for the committee. I'm saying you would be on the committee.
Yeah, we do have some people.
You'd have suggested, Jenny, right? But, you know, but I mean, that's the deal. Yeah, I mean, somebody needs to do that. I mean, we have the power of ordinance in the county. It's Article 11 of the California Constitution. We can create ordinances in the county,
right?
As long as we're in compliance with Article 11 of the California.
Through the executive and legislative body, which is the Board of Supervisors.
Yes, exactly right. That's exactly right. So, it really comes down to, I think, the way we win back our country is county, state, fed. Oh my, kind of like lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. The thing is that we've got to start there at the local level. Now. I want to get your thought process on that. I know, you know, you can't make legislation, but you sure as heck can suggest it and push for it. What would be some of the things that you'd like to see change in the legislative body that you would champion?
Well, one of the main ones right now is the business friendliness of our state. Mm-hmm. Our current law, our body of law, is based on the assumption that we are, wholly supported by manufacturing businesses that cannot move. And our workforce compensation, our workers' compensation, our liability protections, laws like PAGA, the Private Attorney General's Act, are really sanctioned extortion by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've spent a lot of my time, I went to Columbia Business School, for heaven's sakes, as a conservative, right? And so going to Columbia Business School, you recognize the way that you explain what the importance of business is not through facts and figures. It's through aspirational stories and understanding. And so I will spend a lot of my work and my time on raising and elevating the profile and the importance of businesses in our state so that we stop attacking them from the legislature and really helping our legislature understand the cascading issue to the people that they serve. And I don't mean that I will try to implore them on righteous grounds, right? On this is the correct thing to do. It will be, if you do this, people will stop electing you to office, which is really what these people care about.
Exactly.
So if you hurt them in their pocketbook, they will stop voting for you. And so that's going to be the bulk of the legislation that I will focus on will have to do with really, restoring the fabric of our economy. And that's one of the things that I care deeply about. It's one of the things that cascades to everything else. If we can demonstrate the value for people and businesses, business owners and workers, then we're going to be able to get a lot of the other constitutional issues and infringements rectified, because we're going to focus on doing the right thing for California instead of me just having to spend all of my time stopping them from doing the wrong thing.
Okay, perfect. Now, hey, along those lines, our southern border is non-existent. So how would you, as the governor, work with the feds to get that corrected? How would you use everything you have, all the tools you would have at your disposal within the state to get that under control?
Sure. Well, Governor Brown enacted our sanctuary state by executive order. I can unenact it by executive order. And so one of the ways is to ensure that we have cooperation between local law enforcement and ICE.
Well, one of the things, too, when he did that was illegal. When he did it, he violated
Absolutely.
Title 8, Code Section 1324 of the United States Code, Brown actually violated that because in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 of the United States Constitution, remember that little thing we created called the federal government that the states created? It's not a partnership between the states and the federal government. The federal government is the product of the compact between the states. When we did that, we gave to them in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, the jurisdiction over naturalization. So the governor never had jurisdiction over naturalization anyway. So the deal is that 1324 is very specific in that that's a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I look at a lot of things, and I know James Gallagher and Kevin Kiley, those guys have really worked their butt off and gone and done court cases. But really and truly, I think that we have to start looking at the law and some of the things that these people are doing, and they're breaking that law. Because, the jurisdiction that Brown used and Newsom followed basically is a felony.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you're pointing to, though, is that what happens if those cases are brought? You have judges that were appointed by Brown hearing the cases, right?
Yep.
And so you're actually directly supporting my case for why it is critical to have a governor of a different party in office, because we don't have an independent judiciary to even hear those cases right now. And that creates a major problem for us when people continue to pursue these law-breaking activities. But you asked me what I can do, so immediately I can just do that by executive order, whether it was lawful or not, whether it was right or not. I don't have to actually justify my reasons for doing it. I can simply remove it by executive order.
Well, along those lines then, too, you can remove the emergency order that we're under, too, right?
Absolutely.
For, the 2 weeks that turned
in
into 2.5 years.
Well, Houston right now, and we still have emergency orders.
That's right.
We have two problems. We shouldn't have an emergency order, and we shouldn't have an emergency order that is enabled to persist for this long. So emergency orders should be for emergencies, and his ability to grab power for over 2 years under that emergency order is,
by law they are.
Unconstitutional as well.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, because by law they are. The state of emergency is when the county resources are overwhelmed by the threat. That never happened anywhere, So the justification of that, I mean, you're right. I think the thing is that, I love what you're saying, and I love the fact that you can actually, to me, though, again, it gets to a point. I think a lot of people are frustrated in this because of the fact that basically we keep going round and about the fact that we have people in government that are actually criminals. For life.
Yes.
I mean, period, And
they're
these are crimes. I mean, if you and I tried to do any of this stuff, we would be arrested for it. So
correct.
I think that you kind of
And under what's happening in the Dems right now, right, the person who oversaw the $20 billion loss in the state of California under the EDD got promoted to the federal government.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
Does that make any sense at all? Yeah, congratulations, America. That's what
Well, Jenny Ray, we have a caller on the line here. Dolores, do you have a question for Jenny Ray?
Yes. Hi, Terry. This is Dolores. I have a question regarding, you said that there's it's expensive to do an audit, but I received a letter a couple years back that they told me that the state gave me three options to do an audit. They told me that all I have to do is contact a U.S. senator or a state assembly or anybody in a U.S. representative to request them to do an investigation to send a letter. Is that correct? To do an audit or an investigation of fraud or
abuse? Yes, you can request it, but it won't necessarily be taken up. So you can request it, but it isn't. You don't have the authority to demand an audit, whereas as the governor, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dolores. You know, something else, a U.S. senator wouldn't have jurisdiction to do that anyway. I don't think. How does a U.S. senator?
Right, so they can. They basically submit. It's like a.
They could submit it, yeah, but they wouldn't have jurisdiction,
right?
Yeah.
Please audit this place.
Yeah. We can all do that.
And then they'll do some substantiation of whether or not it's there. And I would say that if you have reason to believe that an audit should be requested, that's one of the ways that we can exercise our voice.
There you go.
But there is a difference between the jurisdiction over doing it and the request for doing it.
Well, and they should do it because the constituency is, are the employers of everybody that's elected. Every elected official is duty-bound to their electorate, and that's we the people. So there should be more weight held by we the people when we submit documentation requesting things to be done versus the other way around.
Correct. And so my understanding is that, again, if you have 50 people submit a request for an audit, it's going to have more bearing than somebody who's singularly there.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. And then one thing we haven't talked about before we lose you, we want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of you. So,
oh, yes.
So, like, website, whatever. I mean, I'm sure you have a website, don't you?
We have a website. We have a very active website. We have a website. We have social media. So our website is Jenny Ray, JennyRayCA.com. And you can look up my name, Jenny Ray LaRue, or you can look up just that same handle, Jenny Ray CA, on any social media platform. And you'll see pictures of me at events all over the state. You'll see me learning about issues like forestry and water, wildfire and homelessness. You'll see the positions that I've taken on, a number of different issues. And you'll also see and hear how we're going to win this race. And so if we have a couple minutes left, that's what I'd like to spend our final
time talking about.
Get this done.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, because it's amazing to have a candidate. It's a different story to get them into office. And so, I took a look at the exit polls from the recall. And I said, do I believe that this is an unwinnable state? Can we never have a Republican governor? And I saw some really interesting things. The one that I already mentioned was the view on the economy, which I think that we can all agree has changed entirely since September 14th of 2021. People's views of whether we are in a strong economy have changed. And you can see it. They're not buying houses right now. They're not incurring new expenses. People have really slowed down what they're spending, and that is kind of what often will precede a recession, right? Because people are beginning to get nervous about the future of our economy. And I don't get excited about that, but I do look at it as a timing opportunity for removing Gavin Newsom from office. We also saw that there were a lot of people who said that they did not vote for Gavin Newsom, but instead against the recall, the idea of the recall. And I'm sure that you heard and saw this in Shasta County, too, that people didn't necessarily vote for or against candidates, but they just didn't like the idea of a recall, even though it's in our Constitution. We can do one. And so we're not in a recall. We're in a standard election. So I look at this race as a different moment in time. I'm a different candidate. And, in fact, one thing that I just want to leave people with to give hope, the four most popular governors in America, judged by their approval ratings, are Republicans in deep blue states. They're all business people. That's a really important thing for us to note. That's who the blue states elect into office, as someone to be the adult in the room, someone to say,
like,
no, we're going to do this way. This is what's good for people, and someone who has the experience of doing that with large organizations in an executive capacity. And I think that there's no doubt that amongst the candidates that are running against Gavin Newsom, I present the strongest case for why someone should vote for me. I will do the right things. I've done it before. But also, we're going to present a different contrast option than we've presented before against Gavin Newsom, a woman with kids in public school who cares really deeply about California and running a very positive campaign about the future. And I think that we're going to find that our Hispanic voters, our suburban families are going to view that really differently than they viewed our candidates before. That's what gets me excited. That's why I'm confident that we can win this race. And that's why I just want to invite anybody who's listening today to please get involved. You can donate. You can join us. We have an event next Monday night, April 18th in Reading. You can find information about that on our website, or you can send us a message through social media. But we would love to meet you, get to know you, and also encourage you to become a part of our team.
Now, what time does that start, and where is it at?
Yeah, it's a 6:30 p.m. event, and it's at a private residence. So you just have to let us know that you want to come, and we'll give you the address. We're not going to publish the address outside.
There you go.
You know, there's such a thing as protesters every once in a while that come to these things. And so So we're super happy to have people come, but the hosts, I think, would be more happy if we don't have a big uprising outside at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's important that people hear your message. And also, you know, just before we close out here, I think one of the things that that we didn't bring up, the homeless issue is really something that's got to be a top priority. And we didn't really cover that very much. You want to give us about 2 minutes on that, and then you'll have about 3 minutes to wrap it up.
Sure. So, you know, I've hired a presidential level team to run this campaign. And it's no question that when we look at the data, there are three main issues that people want to talk about: crime, homelessness, and education. And we actually really didn't talk about education a lot either. But let me just share really briefly about homelessness. The key issue that we have with homelessness in California is that our homeless have more rights than the residents of their homes. And so that imbalance of rights is improper. It makes absolutely no sense. The reason that that happens is that Gavin Newsom has spent around $800,000 a person on permanent housing, which is something that the state into perpetuity will have to support for our homeless, instead of into transitional housing, which includes programmatic care. What do I mean by that? I mean that having somebody in a gated area with individual cube housing, not like a shelter, which many homeless people would view as unsafe, that then supports that area with drug and alcohol treatment, as we mentioned before, with mental health services, and with job training services. Those kinds of programs are the ones that are much more cost-effective that I will expand in the state. They're working in places like Fresno and Bakersfield, and they begin with people's names. And I actually went and sat with our homeless community in Redding, and I asked them, tell me the name of one person in the government that you know. No one could name someone. So if the government says that they're doing something, it's not actually human-centered, and we're not solving problems. And so we can really clearly see that those are some of the issues. But for less money and more effectiveness, we can remove the homeless from our streets by focusing on rehabilitation and by making sure that we don't just allow free camping everywhere. Can I just also mention education, since I talked about the fact that
this amazing team that
we have is kind of, you know, supportive of that as well. My kids are in a public charter school. They're in a Spanish-speaking school. And it's just one of those things where we wake up in the morning, we're so grateful for it. We're grateful that they're going to a school where they're learning something that we couldn't teach them at home. The reason that the government should pay for education at all is workforce training, developing the workforce of the future. And we've gotten so far away from that that our schools in California have become indoctrination camps. So we need to restore local control to schools. We need to make sure that we are supportive of school choice, of charter schools, and of curricular advancement. And I have appointments on the curriculum board, which it probably won't surprise you, is over 50% from Los Angeles County. We have 58 counties in California, and 50% of the curriculum board is from Los Angeles County. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm the kind of problem who, kind of person who says, well, also a problem. I think people will call me a problem when I'm in office because I'm going to be looking into these things. But I'm the kind of person who looks at a problem and tries to figure out what I can do and how I can get it done. And, you know, as someone who comes from the private sector, if you promise people something that you can't do, it's a really great way to get fired. So I would like to stay in office in California to have not just 4 but 8 years to do some of these things, because I'm confident that the California of the future can be, like I mentioned earlier, not just what it was before, but better.
There you go.
Well, Jenny Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes.
It really has. And
thank you for having me.
No problem. We'll have you on again, and I'll contact your people about Mountaintop Media. But also, you should know that this program being archived, you can share this program with everybody in the universe if you want. And I think, and so there's some certain things that we can be talking about that we like to offer candidates that we have on, so that you can use this and share it and use it as a tool to get your message out. But again, it's been Jenny Ray LaRue, thank you so much. And folks, you know, we have to be looking at this to where when we have candidates that do come on, do interview, and actually answer the question.
Refreshing.
It is refreshing. Jenny Ray, best to you.
Thank you. It's an honor.
I'll talk to you
appreciate
soon.
Appreciate your time today.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks
I'll talk
again.
To you soon.
Thank you.
Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Hey, Jay.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.